Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome to Station Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, this is Matt Weber. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 35. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm just wondering where I'm going to get my Super Bowl tickets.
Hey, that was a good win for them.
Yeah, it's going to be the world's... If they were in there, though, it would be the lowest rated Super Bowl ever.
Yeah, well... Hey, might be, but yeah, that was a nice win for the Bears. You know, they it wasn't pretty.
Yes.
Wouldn't have been pretty for the Buccaneers. You know, if they were the winners, they'd be saying it wasn't pretty too. But they, it was the first time in a while that I've really looked at the Bears defense and said that's a terrific game. You know, they a few big plays that they gave up, but yeah. By and large, they were pretty tough. And Foles did just enough. He made a couple of hot reads, especially on that last drive, that nice little pass to Montgomery out of the backfield. He made a couple of hot reads that Trubisky never could have made.
Right. There's a couple times when you like some guy to move a little bit, you wish kind of Trubisky was there, but not all the time. You know, it's kind of he is what he is. So.
Well, Foles.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for knowing how to play. Talent is one thing, but knowing how to play the position is something else.
No doubt about it. Foles was horrific the first quarter and a half, and then all of a sudden, yeah, something flipped, and he was a different guy for the last two and a half quarters, and was really good. And he definitely made some reads that Mitch wouldn't have made, even though you would say Mitch has much more talent as far as. You know, mobility, arm strength. I mean, he looks like a quarterback, and yet Foles between the ears is definitely light years ahead of him, and maybe always will be.
Well, yeah, I thought they were toast when the guard went out and the rookie guard came in, and I just mauled him like the next three plays, but he seemed to stiffen up a little bit after that.
Well, I hate to analogize my softball career to professional sports. But I will in this one
might as well.
Case. There was a when our team was brand new, and we had some really good athletes, and we could when I say we, I don't necessarily mean me, but we could run, we were pretty good. But we would play these older teams, these experienced teams, and somehow or another, they would put this nice, comfortable 8-5 loss on you. And we used to say they old manned us.
Yep.
And then later on in the career progression here, we were the ones that were old manning the other teams, because you just learn how to play. You learn how to stop the bleeding when there's bleeding. You learn how to how to make that that one play that just kind of crushes a rally. And, I think those things are important, and that's, that's what Foles brings to the offense that Trubisky just hasn't.
Well, I would agree. And to his credit, even people, you kind of wonder why they expect, we watched, freshman, I watched Joe Theismann play as a senior, and yet he got drafted. And he started for 3 years. He was a very accomplished guy, very close to being a Heisman Trophy winner. And he went to Washington, and he sat behind Billy Kilmer returning punts for, 3 years?
Well, you left out part of his story is that he actually went to Canada first.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So in his case, he didn't wait for the NFL draft. He went ahead and went to Canada. He went up there to meet with him, and he, you know, I think his plan was that he would get drafted, see how his, you know, what his draft situation worked out to be, and then Canada would be an option for him. And instead, he just went up to Canada and didn't sign a contract. They made him such a good offer. And so then he played a few years. I don't remember how many in Canada, and he was good up there. And then he came back and signed with the Redskins. And yeah, he had Billy Kilmer. He had Sonny Jurgensen. Jurgensen's running for Libertarian as the presidential candidate. And so he was even returning kicks for them for a little while. Before he finally secured the starting job, and then wound up having a terrific career for them.
Well, how long did the Packer guy sit behind Brett Favre? Was it 2 years, three?
Probably at least two.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know he was did there for a couple.
That's learnable if I want to actually reach for the keyboard and pull up Pro Football.
Yeah, it was at least a couple. So the it was interesting. It's funny. It was. Yesterday I was stuck watching CNBC, but I'm just astounded. I mean, obviously one of the pleasures I have in doing the show and is in outing what I see is amazing things happening on the same day. They had the chairman of American Airlines on. Of course, this rally in the market is all about pouring more money into it.
It was 3 years, by the way, that Rogers sat behind Favre.
Okay.
You guys were right on.
Did he even do, like, mop-up duty? He must have done a little mop-up duty or something. But
he might have. I'd have to look. But Rodgers was drafted in 05, and Favre started all 16 games in 05, 06, and 07. And then they finally Favre at least started all 16 games.
Wow.
And then Favre went to the Jets, as you recall, for 1 year, and then 2 years with the Vikings.
That's right. And, the money being kind of poured in here, and I'm obviously, I had to go get one of those COVID tests the other day, which is interesting. Well, it wasn't bad. It was the one in the back of your throat, Kevin. So it doesn't painless totally. They turn it around in, I don't know, a few hours, I guess. Anyway, so I didn't hear anybody from anybody, so I guess I'm okay. The guy from American Airlines is talking about, just as I heard a few commercials about, wear your mask, you know, even if you're outside. They're asking this guy, you've got every seat full on these planes. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's no problem. Studies have shown that he can sit, you know, 100 and some people in a tube. Oh, our ventilation is so damn good, guy. You can't even, there's no way you're going to get it in here. And that's what studies have shown. First of all, who the hell did the studies? And if the same person did the study about people sitting out in the park outside, you got to be, I can't imagine that the American people believe both stories. I
don't believe anybody who says studies have shown.
Oh, I don't either.
If
you
want to cite a very specific study, I'll listen. But don't give me that studies have shown crap. That just makes no sense to me. But here's the thing is do you have to wear a mask on there?
Yeah. But so what? I mean, sitting next to somebody for four hours.
And I will say, under the category of studies have shown, has any study ever shown that a mask mandate, caused the incidence of positive tests to decline anywhere?
Oh no. Well, plus no. I don't believe that even if a mask say. Takes 60% of the bad stuff away from the person next to you. If you're sitting next to somebody for 6 hours, I mean, what difference does it make at that point? They're hanging it all on the ventilation, basically. And they're saying that the air in the plane is replaced every 3 minutes or something, which I don't know if I buy. But
well, hey, if they can HEPA filter it out of there, that's that could be a good thing, and that would be fine. But you know, let's hear more than studies have shown. Let's cite the studies. Who did it? What the circumstances were? How controlled was it? Has it been reviewed? You know, all of those things that would tell me it matters. I honestly don't think it matters much. So I guess I guess I don't care very much. I wouldn't be afraid to fly.
No, I don't think I would either. But I just one of the interesting parts, and I guess I could find these again, although I never could find stuff again, is when we first did the 6 foot part. I went back and researched, you know, where the hell that came from. Well, it turns out the original studies, original of people around you getting something from you had to do with tuberculosis, which obviously was one hell of a disease, or still is. And they came back. This was the Harvard University study of, you know, like 1919 or something. And they claimed that 3 feet was the number. That if you were within 3 feet of somebody, you're going to give them enough load of stuff. I mean, the difference now is you'll read articles where somebody will say, well, if you're jogging along and the wind blasts this way and somebody's 30 feet away, the other, according to fluid dynamics, some minor particle could land on them. But they don't give any idea as to whether or not, landing on somebody's shirt, pants, head, I mean, is enough going to get in your, are you going to breathe enough in to create a viral load for you to get sick? And the answer, I'm going to guess, without being Sid Scientist, is no. I mean, I don't think that, anyway, the tests there came back as 3 feet. Now, that's a 100-year-old test. In the first Bush administration, they redid, I don't know if it was first or second, might have been second, they redid these tests, and they did them on airlines. And they said, how far away do you have to be on an airline if something like this were to happen, like TB? And the answer there came back 6 feet. So the reason why we went to 6 feet everywhere was because of this study, and it was picked up. Every president, when they get in, has like a handbook on pandemics. Of course, they don't think we followed it at all, but they're all pretty much the same. In fact, there was a lady on TV that had like six of them on her hand. She goes, they're just updated. They're updated, but they all have the same mentality to them. Anyway, so the idea was that on a plane, you needed to be 6 feet apart because you're in a closed area. So now we've gone exactly the opposite. We're like 12 feet outside, and we're an inch and a half in a plane. So let's put it this way. We keep talking about the science of this. What are we talking about? It's exactly the opposite.
No kidding.
It's exactly
the
opposite.
The science. Gotta follow the science. I'll do what the scientists say. Well, you know what? I think that's the problem in the first place, is we're doing what the scientists say, and it's all over. First of all, it's all over the place,
right.
And second, it's been consistently wrong in terms of the response.
But I want my scientists, like, bring my own umpire. We'll do what the umpire says. By the way, here's my umpire, you know, type of thing.
I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, at least I know where I'm coming from.
Let me pick the umps. I should always get to pick the umps.
Yeah, well, why not? I mean, I think that we're reaching the situation. I get this odd feeling, and Maddie and I were talking about it on the way in. For the people who, let's put it this way, there's a very nice lady lives downstairs in our building, and she's in a garden apartment and so forth, and she comes here from, no names or anything like that, but she comes here from Atlanta, Kevin, and, her place has a big office here in Chicago, and a pretty big office in Atlanta, and she's her family's from Detroit, so she wanted to get closer. Her sister had a baby and so forth, so she, you know, Detroit's not that far compared to Atlanta. And
no, it's actually kind of perfect because it's close enough to go whenever you want to, and far enough to not have to deal with them every day.
Well, that's right. So she's downstairs. She likes it. You know, we did some remodeling and put some stuff in more for a lady, and I've done some work down there, and she's happy as a clam, pretty much. But she has not met a soul from her new place. Everybody's not only working from home, but they're not coming out to see anybody. So she hasn't met a soul from work. She says, I'm down here basically in the basement, which is a garden apartment, right? She goes, normally I could care less. She goes, but now I'm here 24/7. And I go out and walk the dog three times a day. She goes, I got to find a place where it's got a balcony or something. I said, I understand. I mean, I understand totally. She goes, Chief, you have no idea how how jealous people are that you're going to work every day. Because this is getting insane. And, you know, Maddie knows some people that have been not working, and it's almost the money's a problem, but the lack of doing anything is even more of a problem. And I honestly believe, you know, people are going to wing the death numbers, you know, from April at me and so forth. But the fact is, I really believe, and not politically at all, that the danger, the mental health danger of what we're doing right now is overcoming the COVID danger. I really believe that.
Well, did you see the story about the protests at a nursing home in Colorado?
I did not.
In Greeley? Yeah, they're saying they'd rather die of COVID than loneliness.
I've said something like that 8 weeks ago. I said, if you walk through a nursing home, our buddy Doc, not Dr. J, our other buddy Doc, his mom, who's in perfect health, can't even play bridge with people in the nursing home. I mean, what the hell, over? she says, and Audrey's friend, who moved into one just out of her apartment because some of her friends were in this assisted living, she walks by the desk every day. She's not supposed to leave her room, but she does anyway. And says, I've been in jails better than this, and the food was better. just to piss everybody off. But how do you do that to people? I mean, don't people understand what people are like? We're social animals, for God's sake.
And that's, you know, it is kind of the, it's the paradox here, because you have, this is done by politicians who generally claim that they're there for the average people. You know, we understand. I feel your pain. All of those kinds of commentaries that go on and anything related to it, but they don't. They don't relate at all. We talk about the management class a lot. We talk about the political class too, the ruling class, whatever you want to call it. But the creatures that it produces are some of the most uncaring people in the world, even though they don't think they are.
Well, I agree, and it's not just anybody. My stepfather went through the whole nursing home thing for a while, and he went through three or four, and every one of them, I can't say they really liked any of them, and they were pretty expensive. Of course, he was a very pain in the behind patient, which probably was part of it. But
I have this vision of it. Yes.
Yeah. Walt was a pretty good guy, but he was kind of tough to deal with a lot of times. Let's just put it there. You didn't want to be his waitress. You didn't want to be his nursing home attendant. Just saying. So we ended up getting him in the one down in Manteno for the veterans. People down there could not have been nicer. Could not have been nicer, Kevin. And it's a waiting list is like 6 months, right? And then when you get down there, it's half full. And I go, hey, what the hell? We don't have the budget. We only have a certain amount of people, you know, per person. So the place is literally half full with a waiting list of 6 months. And the people down there are so special. Care was unbelievable. Audrey says, I can't believe it. Nobody smells. Everybody's sheets are clean. This is not like any nursing home I've ever been in. Everybody knows that if you show up a couple times a week, your person is taken care of better. I mean, everybody knows that. If you have an advocate, right? And the, the idea that a nursing home for a long period of time can say that nobody can come in and see somebody, to me, is criminal. Because you want to see somebody, you want to make sure they're looking okay, you want to make sure they don't have a black eye, not that, you know, that he ever did or anything like that, if anybody might have deserved it.
You're not talking specifically, you're just talking in general, because those kinds of things happen in nursing homes sometimes.
And the idea that you can somehow ban everybody, and I'm not saying that, you know, this disease wasn't pretty darn, well, it's still pretty bad, but it was real bad in April. And so, but there isn't a room where you can look through plexiglass, you can do something. And when the record reflects, it's going to reflect that all these people caught it, not from guests, but from employees. I'm not all, but I'm in a real whole big part of it. So, I mean, these decisions are starting to be, they're starting to be pretty foolish in retrospect, but the fact that we're hanging on to them, you know, is even worse. I mean, not now, I think some people in the summertime, I know our friend, our attorney buddy Greg was on the show once in a while, his mom, you get to go, and they wheel her outside, you at least get to see her. But our buddy Doc, he says, I bring her to dinner, because it's like the scene in, that was the movie, Ben-Hur, where they had that, maybe I don't know if you ever saw Ben-Hur, but they had the leper colony. There's this big, essentially big, empty football field, although there was no football, and you'd bring out your chow for your leper, and you'd drop it in the middle of the field, then you'd walk back, and then they'd walk out and grab it in the middle and go back their way. Because that's the way it is in the nursing home. I can't even hand it to her. Now, how long is this going to last, Kevin? 5 years? 10 years? All these people are dead? Then you can't even...
The new normal, Tom. It's going to be forever because it's going to be normal.
You know what? It's not normal. I love that thing you sent me, the poor priest of Wisconsin that was given the homily.
Yeah, in Minnesota, actually, but yeah, this isn't normal. You know, keeping 6 feet away from people, not a normal way for humans to live.
No.
Covering your face, not a normal way for humans to live.
Yeah, and he says, everybody just keep pushing on this, and, you know, they make it normal, but it's not. Anyway, crazy stuff.
No, you know, this guy's framing of it was that it's evil.
Yeah, and he... I think it sort of is the but the question is who's making these calls and why are they making them and what are we going to do when things change? And right now the thing you sent me about the universities, I mean, I stopped for lunch yesterday in the hood, and I don't think anybody's at DePaul except the sports teams. I mean, Maddie, there must be somebody. I mean, if you got a chemistry class, you got to go, right? Or
maybe. Yeah, I mean, there's some activity there. It's not as busy as normal, but there's definitely some people on campus.
Yeah, the way it's working, you know, at least working for us, if our labs are open. So if you need, you know, the nursing students or the respiratory therapy students who need to get in for clinicals clinicals are actually off-site, but some of their lab work and equipment work, they do it. The IT people, the network people can get in. The visual communications people and and we have culinary arts as well, and they need to get in and use some of the
knives,
kitchen equipment. So they're able to get in. It's kind of scheduled so that they aren't full at any given time. But there are others there. So that's how that's working. And I'm sure DePaul's doing similar things.
What is every man's view of the market versus the economy? What are people asking you in class, Kevin? I mean, it's very strange that there's, whenever there's money coming in, we fly up, and a minute there's a hint that there's a script. It's like the market is running, trying to run the politicians.
Yeah, it's kind of off topic for the classes I'm teaching at the moment, so it really hasn't come up. Because I have an online management class where there really isn't that much. You know, it's online. It's not live stream. It's the what I now refer to as the old fashioned online. So there isn't that much conversation that's off of assignment topics, which I miss that. I keep saying, I miss the classroom a lot because you can veer off in a lot of directions, and I do. The other one is in the IT world. So I'm a little bit of a strange bird as it comes to when it comes to credentials to teach, because I can teach in three different programs. So I will have my supply chain students in the second 8 weeks of this semester, and we probably will get into a lot of the economic things more. So I'll report back to you on that, but I really don't. I can't tell you what students are asking right now because they aren't.
I have a question for you. We'll probably go into more after the break, but if the market is allegedly this all-knowing, perfect pricing of stuff at the time, how is it that the market's perception is every company that's broken up is worth more than it is together? I'm talking specifically about IBM, there are some companies, I'm going to say like McDonald's, who seemingly historically can never really compete with themselves with another chain. So whenever they get into another business, it's always probably an accretive thing when they let it fly and let people run it that aren't connected with McDonald's. And that's probably somewhat of a weakness in McDonald's, but I mean, you would never guess that Procter and Gamble, who I think has always been very good at that, you would never guess that if Tide went to, you know, Kevin and Chief's firm, that it would be worth more than it would be with Procter and Gamble. They seem to be able to have all kinds of different products managed somewhat competitively, but not jealously or something. They do a very good job with it. But it seems like every single company now all you got to do is say, "Geez, PTI is for sale," and somebody, you know, everybody expects somebody to come in with like a $20 million bid or something. I mean, why do you suppose that is, Kevin? If the market is supposedly so efficient,
because most acquisitions are not efficient. Is that your concern?
Well, maybe they are. Maybe people. That's
no, they're really not.
Say maybe people's view of management is in a lot of these companies it is too stodgy, or too old, or they're not doing it right, or they're paying themselves too much. The fact is, people could be right on this, maybe that's why they have people that are these, you know, guys that want to get on the board and shake things up. I mean, maybe these places become, not every single one, maybe they become too stuck in the mud, for lack of a better term.
Well, and there's always opportunities for cost saves. You know, you don't need two accounting departments. You can have one. So, you know, some of those kinds of things come into play. But unless you really know and understand the business, often after acquisitions, people lose market share.
Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that, because you're in that management, you know, you teach that, which is good. And I'm going to lob what Milton Friedman's, some of the last stuff he did at Chicago before he went to Stanford, that he was studying in, and he kind of disagrees with that at some level. And I guess I don't know the level he was at. Well, the level would be different now. S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 43, individual stocks in the Dow, nothing jumps out at us today except McDonald's is up 162. The same store sales are up. I'm going to say, Kevin, that their prices are up at least 10% from last year. And their same store sales are up 6. So is that good or not? Nobody's mentioned the price part. Hey, we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Out. Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 17, NASDAQ Futures up 47. Go Bears, we're Manny's out there. Are we going to be pressed this year at the Super Bowl? Finally?
If the Bears make it to the Super Bowl, we got to figure out a way to go. Now, I don't know if they're going to have the normal radio row like they would under a normal Super Bowl, but we got to get down there.
Yeah, I don't care if we go to the game, as long as we get somebody's tent, somebody's big shots tent.
That'd be That's right.
Anyway, Dow up 131. Again, I'm convinced now that we just want to have the promise of stimulus every day from now to like forever, and we'll just be up every day. Nikkei down 27 points, 0.1%. Shanghai up 54. These guys had been closed, so this is their first salvo in like a week. So they're up 1.7%, but that's like 5 days worth. Hang Seng down 74.3%. Over in Europe, DAX down 7, call that flat. FTSE up 24.4%. Gek around up 15.3, so not much going on worldwide. There's a review of yesterday. Dow was up 122, S&P up 27, NASDAQ up 56, so like a fourth big day in a row. Bonds, 0.77, so they're appreciably higher than the 0.64 they were last week. Bund, minus 0.53, Bund isn't going anywhere. In Japan, same place, positive 0.028. Oil, down 39 cents at 40.80, but pretty, well, I won't say well over 40, but they're over 40. Brent down 37 cents, 42.97. Natural gas up 7, 270. It's high for that. RBOB down 2 cents, 120. Gold with a pretty serious rally this morning, up 28 bucks, 19.23. Silver up 67 cents, 24.55. Copper up 3 cents to 307. My FCX that I got into a while ago is doing pretty well. But I've been long that thing so many times. Finally, it's moving a little bit. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're very quiet so far, Chief, on the area expressways. No issues at all coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson have been quiet all morning. We had some earlier delays on the Dan Ryan due to road construction, but that's all clear now. They've picked that up. No issues on I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Lakeshore Drive looking good. Off the expressways, a couple of crashes to note. Northern Suburbs, Butterfield Road at Route 45, there is a crash. And then down to the southwest, Archer Avenue at Cliff Street, there is an accident. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to feel like summer today, Chief. On October 9th, will be partly cloudy with a high of 80.
Wow.
Right now it's clear and 57, going up to a very pleasant high of 80, and we'll be in the 70s all weekend. Enjoy the beautiful October weather this weekend. For our Phoenix listeners, it cools off just a bit. Sunshine with a high of 99 today. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, the Bears fell behind 13-0 late into the second quarter, and it looked like another abysmal offensive performance as they did against Indianapolis just 3 days prior, or 4 days prior. But then the Bears scored two quick touchdowns in the final minute and a half of the first half and held on to beat Tampa Bay 20-19 as both teams exchanged field goals in the second half. Nick Foles struggled early but finished with a decent line, 30 of 42, one touchdown, one interception. That's an 83.7 QB rating. Solid, not great. Tom Brady was a little bit better, but 25 of 41, 253 yards for a touchdown and no interceptions. David Montgomery didn't run the ball very well, 10 carries for 29 yards, but he did have some big receptions, 7 balls for 30 yards, including a 17-yard gain. Allen Robinson caught 10 balls for 90 yards, didn't get in the end zone. But the Bears did just enough, defense made some plays, and they beat Tom Brady for the first time ever. They were 0-6 against Tom Brady in his years with the Patriots, and then they finally beat him last night. So the Bears are now 4-1, and then they get some time off here, obviously. They'll be off this weekend before they play again. So congrats to the Bears. Chief.
Some pretty iffy penalties in that game. I'm not so sure I would have given the center and the other team for that very minuscule conversational headbutt 15 yards.
Yeah, I almost felt like there was something we didn't see there or something, because that seemed a little light for a 15-yard penalty. I did really like that they picked up that penalty against Fuller.
Yeah.
And not only did they pick it up, but they turned the incomplete pass into a fumble, which I also agreed with. And, you know, I feel like officials very rarely get that right. But that was a clean hit. The receiver took three steps, had plenty of time to protect himself, you know, the hit against the defenseless receiver. So they picked up the flag. And then not only that, they looked at it and they're like, hey, he caught the ball, took three steps. That's a fumble, too. And it was obviously a huge play.
I think they should have given, even though they ended up scoring anyway, they should have given that guy the touchdown on the catch that he made. There was nobody around him. The one where the guy was on the ground and early in the game.
Which play?
The guy, they called it incomplete, but it wasn't. He had his hands under it.
Oh, yeah. No, they called that a catch.
Yeah, but, no, but they...
But they blew it dead before he got in the end zone.
He was rolling pretty fast. I mean, it must have been a quick whistle.
Yeah, it was definitely a quick whistle. When you saw that live, you thought for sure that was incomplete. And then you saw the replay once. It's like, holy crap, he caught that, and he was untouched. So they did give him a catch, and it was a gain of 10 or 12 or whatever, and so they were first and goal at the one. But they said they blew it dead before he rolled in the end zone, which turned out to be a bad whistle. Now, it didn't matter because Tampa scored on the next play, but still, yeah, that was a crazy catch.
There were a couple of kind of holding calls that in the mess of all the other offensive line holding that I was watching that seemed a little tacky. They could have called worse calls on the same play, it seems like, a couple times. But anyway.
Yeah, I think the Bears got the better of the officiating last night.
I think they might have, too. Plus, Brady was not... He wasn't real happy with his offensive line. You think they're going to dinner tonight? I'm thinking no.
Foles shouldn't have been very happy with his either.
Yeah, he wasn't as vocal as...
I haven't been happy with the Bears' offensive line for going on 3 years, so I don't know why Foles would be. And you notice Brady lost track of the downs. Not that it mattered. It isn't as if on his last pass that he... dumped off thinking he could come back out and go for short yardage on fourth down. He was throwing for the first down, well past the first down marker. So I don't think it mattered in a decision that he made.
Kevin, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, this is from my classes with, and this, it's obviously very germane to what's going on in Congress right now, where mostly the Democrats are deciding these big companies are too big, although I don't think they have the stones to do anything, so all they're doing that is pandering to their base, I think. But that's all these people do is pander, and they don't ever do anything. But that would not just be the Democrats. But you mentioned, as a guy who teaches a lot of management science and, efficiencies and those kinds of things, like a PTI size, I mean, we've got, 7-8 people. So it's... clearly, if we were to merge with somebody with 10 people, I mean, we do our compliance because of the wacky stuff you have to do these days. We have people from the outside that help us with our compliance. Okay, so it's a non-subject now, but traditionally we would have a compliance person, and if another firm was around that had 10 people, they would have a compliance person. Well, obviously, if you had a firm of 17 people, you probably only need one compliance person, so you could riff the dude. How's that? How's that for an old term?
You could riff him, yeah.
Riff him.
No, right-size him, Tom. Right-size him.
Well, that's the new term. What was the old term? It was riff, and then it was downsize. I was downsized. In the immortal words of Stan Bartnizak, hey, buddy, you got bleep canned. Anyway. So... Intuitively, at most of the levels of businesses that you and I see, I mean, not that we trade, those are obviously a lot bigger, but every time there is somewhat of a merger, let's forget we're not doing it just to raise prices on people, but you would think there would be some efficiencies. We really need one human resource department, not two, those kinds of things. Yet, Milton Friedman was convinced in the last... couple classes I had where we were sort of done with the classwork, and he was going through a lot of different topics, which he did a lot in class, because he loved talking about other stuff and not just supply economics, thank God. He would talk about, he honestly believed that he was doing some work, that you reach a stage where if you get bigger, you get less efficient, not more. And he had all these mathematical things he put on a board one day that he was going to. In other words, it might be okay for PTI to join with ITP, two firms of 10 people, and you get accretive. But there's nothing that says that when Bristol Myers bought Squibb, say, that's accretive. I mean, they're so big that doubling the size there, you might actually cause more trouble than you think. And he was dying to prove it. I don't know if he ever did any more work on that when he went to Stanford or whatever, but what do you think of that?
Well, I think there's a case to be made for that. Some companies are better than others at this. But there's a few things that happen when you do an acquisition. And I've worked on, let me see, I've been through 8 mergers or acquisitions. So I've kind of lived in that world and developed some expertise, you know, personal. What you want to do, if you're going to acquire and cut costs, then you really need, you need to maintain your market, your market share that you're acquiring. And a lot of businesses will do that. You're going to merge them, you're going to get all kinds of synergies out of it, and you're going to cut costs. Now, if you're buying somebody who's in a different business than yours, maybe it'll work if it's like a vertical market that is related, but not directly the same business. That can work, but if you don't have expertise in a business, then that can be a problem. Then you get in and you screw it up.
You're talking about that. You don't believe
chaotic,
that
as you go through the process of combining computer systems and trying to merge accounting departments and human resources departments and all of those things, sometimes you create a lot of chaos, and it takes years to overcome that, and therefore it's not an effective merger. And then sometimes you see the portfolio mergers like a Berkshire Hathaway, where they just buy them and they monitor management's effectiveness, and otherwise they pretty much don't run them. There is no synergy created between Forest River, which creates RVs, and Benjamin Moore Paints, except possibly to make Forest River use Benjamin Moore Paints in their process. But other than that, there's really nothing, and Berkshire Hathaway just leaves them alone, lets them run.
So you don't describe it.
It looks for good management people to have in there.
You're not a Harvard guy of the 60s and 70s where I'm a manager, just point me at a business, doesn't matter if it's a hot dog stand or steel mill, I'll manage it.
Yeah, that was very prevalent thought in the 1970s, that if you can manage in one business, you can manage in any business. And I think that whole quality management movement that took hold in this country in the 1980s, the Deming approach to it, kind of went counter to that. And instead, there is a very strong belief that it's important to really know your business. You can't create the kind of culture you need to be a learning business, to be to implement continuous improvement unless you understand the business.
I don't think I ever blew. Well, that led you to all your conglomerates, but then again, the conglomerates, the reason why they did their stuff is because they basically cheated on the accounting and they all blew up.
There's not a long history, a long list of successful conglomerates.
Well, plus you run into our buddy, he's been on the show a few times, John Lee, who actually still lives in Singapore. He doesn't know how well he's going to get out of there, because if he leaves, he can't come back, because you got to quarantine. Anyway, but he's been involved. He was with Arthur Andersen Consulting for a while, and then he was with, when they blew up, they ended up, but when you end up there, that's a big Finnish firm and the big Swedish firm got together. Talk about no culture. Is it Emerson and somebody else? They do all the...
Oh, Nokia. Was it Nokia that got with them?
These guys do a real lot of the infrastructure for cell phones. And you might say to yourself, well, it's a big deal here, obviously, but in China, there are no landlines. The whole place is there never going to be any landlines. I mean, here, we're getting rid of that infrastructure, and I think it's kind of foolish, but we are. Anyway, but those guys, they do a lot of stuff that you don't even realize is behind-the-scenes stuff. But the weird part is when they did acquisitions, they would just say, God, these guys got like 30,000 people working for them. You know, fire 20% of them or some crap. Well, the interesting part there is, Kevin, is you inevitably, the people who leave, like with the first package, are your best people. So you essentially, from the 6,000 people that left, you've just created another competitor. So you think you took one out, now you just made one. Because like all your best people now essentially go as a third party or form another place, and now they're your competitor.
Yeah, so who you lose is a big factor. When you lose them, even if you're losing the people that you don't mind losing, if you have an exodus before you're ready, before you're merged, that creates a whole lot of chaos. And what you wind up doing is you bring in temporary help, and the temporary help doesn't know how to do the job as well, and it's just managing that process is a nightmare. And it's the wisdom is to make it very worthwhile for people to stick around until the end. You know, you have to have really, really strong stay bonuses if you want to make a merger work well and smoothly. Otherwise, you're going to be sorry. I promise you that. That's one of the things that you have to do. It's an expense. You have to build that expense into the the cost of actually doing the acquisition. It has to be baked in, or else you're just going to be screwed.
Kevin, reason why this line of questioning is sort of the set of base, because I'm trying to do a market test on you here. We got 10 minutes. Stuff you look at in a place, stuff I look at in a place, and now all of a sudden we've got what's going on with the market. We've got a difference clearly in the size of firms and what they can borrow for and what they can buy other people for. There's a big disparity. I mean, right now I would say in my mind the market is ridiculously high, yet I take pause and say it looks to me like maybe 3 or 4 years from now, if this ridiculousness continues, the stocks that are in the big stocks that we trade, the top, 200, 300, they might be close to all that's left and actually could be stronger because of everybody else that has to borrow at 7 or 8% and they're borrowing at 2, can't stay in the game. I mean, so we're seeing some awful lot of things impacting pricing of a stock that I never even thought could exist, right? And I've been doing this for a while. And I'm not so sure I like it, to be honest with you. I don't like it at all, because I like to see what a company's doing. I like to see people paying prices and getting prices that are sustainable. Then you can have some kind of an idea of, hey, how are these guys doing, Right now, I don't know how I can price McDonald's. I mean, right now, with all the people falling out in every other part of the business, could they sneakily raise their prices, and I'm going to say another 10% before the end of the year? Yeah. I mean, I with their menu, and this is a buck, and then all of a sudden the buck menu is $2. I mean, I have no idea. I suppose if you were a CPI guy, you'd sit there and go, okay, chief, don't talk about any of that stuff. How much is like the Big Mac, Okay, the Big Mac is up 2% from last year, but guess what? The fries and Cokes are up double or something. I mean, it's very, very difficult when you're that size. But I'm going to say, Kevin, that I was listening to yesterday, the home builder in Virginia. He goes, literally, we're raising prices. I think he said every 2 months we're raising prices just to keep up with the fact that people want houses. We stopped building them when COVID first started. We shouldn't have. Now everybody wants them, and they'll pay anything. And the mortgage rates allow you to get there. The lumber's up 100% this year. I mean, we're being absolutely lied to on these numbers. Now, when you have people that have their median wage is up 3%. To me, there's an end game to this, Kevin, and I don't know where it is. I mean, right now, if you ask me how much should IBM be worth or should Honeywell be worth, I have no idea. because I sound like Frank, for God's sake. I mean, can they raise their prices 10% next year? Probably. I mean, where's their competitor? Who is it? Is there one? I mean, can Walmart raise theirs? They're probably least able to, maybe, but maybe not. I mean, it's this stuff is percolating along here, Kevin, and
The question is, how are they raising the prices? So, you know, as an example, there's two aspects at McDonald's to use them as an example. One part of it is that they just say, yeah, the dollar menu is now the $2 menu, or the value menu, or whatever you want to call it, because now it's $1.19 instead of a dollar. That's a straight price increase, and you know that's fine. That's one way of looking at it, but they also did some menu changes, I don't know, 2 years ago, something like that, where they rolled out these signature sandwiches that are, they're spiffier, let's put it that way. And I don't know what they're called because I don't go there, but I've used it as a case study before because they were actually losing market share for quite a few years. They're still number one in the market and still the big dog, but losing share, and they were concerned about it. And after trying that all day breakfast, which you know didn't, it got them a quick spike, and then everything fell back to normal. And so their next solution to that was, well, let's do more breakfast all day, and that didn't do them any good either. And then they really did step back and look. And if you were to go into a McDonald's now, you see they're remodeling all the stores to make them more friendly, putting in some kiosks to cut costs. Well, along with it, they've created McDelivery in cities and all these things that people want. But they also expanded the menu because the McDonald's menu that we all know was a lunchtime menu. It was a true fast food menu. But if you have a family with young kids and you're going to go sit down someplace to eat, the kids will want to go to McDonald's, the parents won't, you'll wind up going to a pancake house or something. Well, they tried to compete with that by creating some real grown-up sandwiches that compete with places like, Red Robin or someplace like that. And those cost more. Those sandwiches that they now have cost more, and it has increased, first of all, it stemmed the it stopped the slide on market share, but it also raised the per-store revenue, even before you saw prices start to shoot up in other areas. So, you know, again, you have to take it apart and look at it and say, you know, is there a strategy behind it, or is it just jacking up prices?
Well, I think there's always a little bit of both. Well, I mean, there should be anyway. But I think one of the reasons that the breakfast, I'm not a big McDonald's goer anyway, but I don't know, I was coming out of the dentist or something, and of course I didn't eat breakfast, so I'll go to the McDonald's. And the breakfast all day, if you wanted the breakfast special, you know, like two croissants for $4, the specials didn't go past the breakfast time. So everything during the day was full price breakfast. I don't know if you saw that or not, or knew that or not.
No, like I said,
I'm
not one of their customers.
Well, right, so. You know, the thing I'm afeard of here, is that 40 years later, we're going to be back in stagflation, and I never dreamed we would even screw with that in my lifetime. And I think we're right there, Kevin. We're right there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're going to see it too, and. It will be interesting to see how the next president deals with it, whichever president wins the election.
I don't think either one of them have a clue.
I don't think so either. The question is, can they put people around them who have a clue? And, you know, that's hard to say. You know, I don't know what to expect out of a Biden administration. I at least out of a Trump administration, I sort of have an idea. I don't know if the people who have been there throughout his first term will continue to serve, but he's got a handful of people who've been there all along, and then the rest is a revolving door.
Well, if Trump were to win, on a personality side, the man will be unconscionable. He'll be telling us about the election every waking moment for the next 4 years, and how what a great election it was. He wouldn't be able to chance to do anything else, but in terms of policy. I don't, and this is the debate that I have with a lot of people regarding, you should vote for this person, you should vote for that one. I said, the policy never changes. It's just the people who make the dough get the better deals. Although that's somewhat changing, Kevin. I mean, it seems like the same people pay the money to both sides. I mean, I'm going to say that...
Yeah, they hedge.
Yeah.
But the policy, the one thing that did change in the Trump administration was that they really cut into regulations. You know, that was a significant shift in policy. And business people, especially in those small and mid-sized businesses that have a lighter compliance burden, tell me all the time that it mattered a lot.
It didn't affect our business.
By the way, did you see what Nancy Pelosi is going to start into today? She's going to start into she's going to create a commission that allows Congress to intervene under the 25th Amendment to the Constitution, with the possibility of removing the president from his duties because he's not mentally fit to serve.
What about the Speaker of the House?
A commission, if it did well, would take about 5 minutes to shift gears, wouldn't it?
Well, I'd say, is McConnell even alive? I mean, I haven't seen him in all these negotiations. He's been nowhere.
Oh, yeah, I don't think he's been very involved at all. That's been pretty much Mnuchin.
Why is that?
Probably because the president trusts Mnuchin a hell of a lot more than he trusts McConnell.
Is there some commission that we could have that would just say, let's start over without Trump, Biden, Pelosi, McConnell, Schumer, and who's the second guy in Congress? Let's get rid of the six of them.
McCarthy?
Yeah. Can we just start over with somebody new?
I wish we could. I don't think we can. I don't think we're gonna.
No. Pretty scary stuff. So the Irish are playing tomorrow, correct?
Tomorrow night, yep.
Florida State?
Florida State, it better not be a game. Florida State's awful.
How'd they get so bad?
You know, it's interesting to see that how the wheels can come off like that. But you know what? I do have a friend of mine, Mike Frank, who keeps saying it's really hard to hire a good coach, and it very much can be unless you can just go hire someone who is. A proven, you can steal somebody away from another school who is a proven commodity, but man, they've made some bad coaching decisions since Jimbo Fisher was corrupt as could be, but he was, I don't know, it seems like he was a pretty good coach at Florida State, not so much at Texas A&M, so maybe that's not even the good analogy, but boy, since Bowden gave up the controls, and maybe Fisher was the beneficiary of the program as it was for several years before he up and left and took the money at Texas A&M. But boy, it's fallen apart there. And we've seen that. We've seen that with Notre Dame. We saw it with Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, when they hired Rich Rodriguez, how bad did it get so quickly? It happens. It happens everywhere. It happens in Nebraska.
I think there's some guys, Kevin, that are
California before Pete Carroll was hired was just abysmal.
I think some guys are willing to, shall we say, operate on the recruiting edge, and everybody knows who they are.
Well, I think that's part of it, but there's also coaches who think it's all about talent. That if you have nothing but talent, you'll be great. And then they start coaching, and they're not very good at the leadership aspects of their job or the strategic access. The ability to put together game plans.
Well, better are guys when they get there. All right, Kevin. Talk to you tomorrow. I'm sure we'll touch base when the game is on. SP Futures up 15, NASDAQ Futures up 45. Come back, Mr. Lou Michaels, for a Friday appearance.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at cognoshr.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hollies, Mr. Matt Weber, and Mr. Lou Michaels. And I'm going to say, Lou, that the words of that song get more appropriate by the day. There's something happening here where it isn't exactly clear.
Well, the times they are a changing. the kind of social upheaval that we're seeing that we saw in the 1960s, 67, when that song came out, 67, I think.
Pretty close, yeah.
The kind of social upheaval we saw then, we're seeing now. And I always wonder what would have happened if we'd had the kind of social network and organizing structure available to the Students for a Democratic Society or the Symbionese Liberation Army or the Black Panthers or some of the other terror and quasi-terror organizations that existed then. If they'd had the ability to organize the way these guys do now over social media, whether we would have seen even more problems.
Well, you know, our friend Robin, who was a Michigan student at the time that the SDS was there, she probably graduated maybe 71, 72, one of those 2 years. And my buddy's Mark Duffy was probably the same era, 71, 72. They claim that all the guys who were in the SDS, the only time they put down their placards, they all went to the football game.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure we even have we have that going for us today, where people don't even do anything together.
Well, I mean, you could be members of different tribes at the same time. So you could be a group of bomb throwing, revolutionaries, but you could still be Michigan football fans.
are you saying that just about Michigan or anybody?
I mean, the irony is not lost. Overthrow capitalism, well, with the exception of the Big Ten.
Well, yeah, overthrow capitalism or beat Woody Hayes. One or the other.
That's right. That's right. So, I wanted to just comment on a couple of things. I had a short list this morning, but this came out last night, and I was reading. It turns out that Yelp, the online business rating organization, has decided that, for some ungodly reason, that they are going to publish a listing or a rating that will capture complaints of racism against businesses. And if they receive complaints of racism about a business, they will then put its name on a list and publish a separate rating for the business that contains links to any news stories that might apply, but that the rating will go in place. And I'm going, well, this is very similar to what they, first of all, what could go wrong with such a system? I mean, your competitor, and of course the complaints on Yelp can be anonymous and frequently are. In fact, damaging your business opponent on Yelp has been something that's been going on for a number of years. So now Yelp is going to provide you with a particularly toxic way of damaging your business competition, or just, you know, raising hell. And I just thought, you know, this is nuts that they would do this. Number one, for one thing, I think it potentially opens them up to legal liability. And number two, I thought this is just like communist China. I mean, or very similar to the social register, social rating system that they have in China, where you are personally scored on things like credit cards and tax payments and social media postings, and your score has to be above a certain number that is considered to be favorable to the Chinese government. Or, for example, you can't travel, you can't get a passport, you can't open a business, and I just thought this is crazy. And is there nobody at Yelp that thought about this before they put this thing out there?
I'm going to say the Greek word hubris. It's like your buddy Jeff Bezos, or no? Who's the Facebook guy?
Mark Zuckerberg,
saying that his internal people will decide if something is appropriate or not.
Well, the immediate reaction was hilarious because of course what happened was a bunch of people came up on social media and said, "I want to report Yelp for being racist."
Yeah,
you know, put your system in place for your own business.
If I decided to put a complaint in against Lou's Bar and Grill. Did they at least try and make sure that I have a receipt that I was actually at Lou's Bar and Grill?
I don't think so.
Well, then
Yelp works and the way I've seen it, the ratings. I mean, these are typically totally anonymous, and one of the things that has been done and is a way of dealing or of upping the efforts of the resistance is to do exactly this: to call in phony or write in phony complaints on Yelp and try to, you know, drive down a business's Yelp rating by flooding it with phony complaints. It's called astroturfing, and it's the reverse of astroturfing, and it can be very damaging. But I was just thinking, you got to be kidding. And I Yelp has been protected from the comments that get made on its system because it claims that it's not an originator. It's just a pass-through vehicle. But once it starts putting a system like this in place where it's actually bolstering these claims or giving some kind of credibility to these claims, I think that's going to remove it from its legal protection and open it up to some fairly significant liability. And I'm going, okay, so when I think things like that, I mean, I think I'm a wonderful lawyer, but I also know that there are lots of people who think that they're wonderful lawyers. I assume there are legal people look at this, but I don't see how they avoid liability, especially under a couple of state laws that I'm aware of that would just tee them up for propagating defamatory comments.
I don't know. I'm curious. Without spending weeks on it, what if I were to put an ad in newspaper, and just said, "Geez, I went to Lou and Maddie's hot dog joint, and I don't know what the hell they had in those hot dogs. I couldn't get out of the can all night, and God, that stuff was awful. Anybody goes there's out of our mind." What's my liability if I never even went there? I mean, just as a normal person, if I took an ad out or I put a poster in a town square to go back to the 1700s, and it's all a fat lie. I mean, what is the liability for that? I mean, I don't know.
Well, defamation, which incorporates slander and now that I'm talking about it, words are going out of my head. It incorporates both written and oral defamation. Defamation is an un, an untrue statement that is not a matter of opinion, that has some negative aspect attached to it, or a negative, particularly negative aspect attached to it. So calling somebody a thief, calling somebody a pedophile, calling somebody, you know, some horrible term, a racist, can be defamatory. It's typically a matter of state law, but can be defamatory whether it's done in an oral or written, written setting. So if you write a letter like that to the paper and call somebody a pedophile, so and so is a pedophile, that's called defamation per se, because it doesn't need any other embellishment to make it defamatory, and you're liable. I mean, you could be sued for civil damages.
So that's different than saying they served me a crummy hot dog.
Well, right. I mean, this food tasted terrible. Well, that's a matter of opinion, and that's not going to be a defamatory statement per se.
Well, because
obviously the standards
caused me to get sick is different.
Different,
yeah.
For public, what are called public personas versus private personas. So if you're putting yourself out there in the media as a public persona to show defamation, you've got to show something called actual malice. It's an old case from the 60s called New York Times v. Sullivan, I believe. But you've got to show actual malice in the publication of some defamatory thing. Versus if you're a private citizen, just having this stuff thrown out there is enough to give create liability for you.
Where's the line? Now, where's the line?
Well, the line shifts over time. So back in the 1950s, calling somebody a communist could be considered defamation per se. Right now, I mean, it's actually a compliment if you go to a university. So
they haven't gotten that bad, have they?
Yes, they have. The standards that are in place change slightly, and it's done on a case by case basis. But and Yelp and other online publishers like AOL and Facebook and Twitter, all kinds of terrible things get said there. They are inured from or protected from, insulated against liability because of their they've got a special status under federal publication law or federal copyright law that says, look, these guys are not originators. They're not authors. They are simply, conduits, publishers of this stuff. And there's no thought process in place, and therefore there's no intent, and we're not going to attach liability to them. But once you start altering the content, once you start adding to the content or bolstering its effect, I think that takes you outside that legal protection. So, I mean, I'm sure Yelp has looked at this, and I assume that they think they're not going to get sued. But boy, I don't know how they get away from that.
Well, it is a.
I just think from a social perspective, I think it's a disaster. I think opening your rating system up to frivolous charges of racism in a business setting, because I mean, do you either of you guys think that there aren't people who would say, oh, I didn't get the pizza that I wanted from this local parlor. I hated it. I'm going to call them in and accuse them of treating me, in a racially insensitive manner. I'm going to write that into Yelp. And I can do it anonymously, so nobody will ever find out who it is.
Well, it's the racist stuff is getting pretty interesting. The CNBC went through a whole day where I listened pretty much ad nauseum about how there needs to be more African-American people on boards. No, I don't think that having some diversity on a board is a bad idea, because the last thing, I don't think they're working right now, but a bunch of other executives, every time they give you a raise, you go on their board and you give them a raise. I mean,
think about the racist implications in that, just from a philosophical perspective. You believe that, and they're not measuring, it's not diversity of thought they're after, it's diversity of skin color or gender.
Well, that's where I was going.
So what you're saying is black people all think alike, women all think alike, Hispanic people all think alike, Asian people don't really count because they're white adjacent, I believe the term is. But the idea that because you have somebody with a different skin color or different gender on your board, you're going to get different opinions is I think categorically wrong.
And that's why it's
at the foundation of diversity. When diversity started, when the word diversity started kicking in and creeping into our employment settings, it meant we are going to bring people in who think differently from us. And frequently those people will look different from us. But the idea was, there was a business justification for it. You will make better business decisions because you will not be getting a monolithic outlook.
That was
the justification.
See, we're not supposed to agree a little bit. There's no doubt that when you walked into a board, how many years ago I was on the SIBO board, you walk in and you see, we had a couple ladies who were with firms. The firms put them on, we didn't. And you see a bunch of old white guys in suits, you get the feeling that this could be a little bit different, right? So, okay, the solution was to get a couple ladies and a couple of African-Americans. Well, there was an African-American lady, this has to be 15, 20 years ago, I forgot her name. I think she was either the chancellor or something of NYU or someplace like that. I think she was on like 8 or 10 or 12 boards. So she was, this is a whole,
sure.
I mean, she was your essentially token.
Exactly.
And she would vote yes to a raise just like all the old white guys in suits. That's not, then there was an African American couple between the two of them were on like 20 boards. They never voted no for pay raise either. So my idea is, I don't care who you are. I mean, I'd love it if half of them were women and I wouldn't forget the Asians and Hispanics. You'll never once hear an African American person say, "Oh, by the way, there should be a few more Asians than African American." That spot's reserved for the black guy or black lady, right? There's no doubt about that. So, I mean, which is just as infuriating to me as not having any diversification at all. I'm all for it, but the idea is in theory, the at least a few spots on the board, it should be all of them. I'll settle for a few. Should be interviewed by the shareholders, and the first day they walk in, they should shake hands with the chairman and say, "Hey, I'm your new board member." I mean, the chairman hiring the guy when really, who wrote the book Up the Organization? He said the only real job of the board is to monitor the company and hire and fire the chairman. Well, if the chairman picks the board, their only real job is nothing, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, the idea is diversity of thought, because that's the only business justification for a quote diversity effort. Otherwise, you're just trying to play social engineering. But the idea that we're going to put a bunch of black, Hispanic, women, gay, whatever, into these boards, because that's going to give us a diverse thought outlook. I think stereotypes, and it stereotypes a lot. But early on, a number of us in the employment business says, this is going to lead to quotas, and it's going to lead to simply, placeholders coming in to take these jobs. And the business justification for it is going to disappear. And that's exactly what's happened.
My question would be, are you capable of voting no for a chairman's raise? If the answer is yes, you're on. I don't care what color, gender, or sexual orientation you have, Lou.
Well, exactly. But we've completely lost track of that. And so I look at, from an employment law perspective, the diversity efforts have done a lot. But we are rapidly, What you see with diversity, which is sort of the new word for affirmative action, which was the new word for reverse racism, if that's what you want to call it, or reverse discrimination, which really means allowing race, gender, sexual orientation to factor into your employment decisions, all of which is anathema to our employment laws. The way this has developed is we end up with, because we don't use merit anymore, we end up frequently with a phenomena that you see in highly competitive law schools or highly competitive business schools or highly competitive undergraduate institutions, where you bring in people who are, because of a factor other than merit, skin color, gender identity, gender, race, whatever, but not religion. because you bring in those folks on those based on those factors, they don't do well. And so we see now, because we're not getting the result, the social engineering folks are not getting the results that they wanted, we see now a push to eliminate merit. And there is no clearer, as a measure of promotion, and there is no clearer evidence of that than what is happening at Thomas Jefferson High School in Fairfax County, Virginia, which is, I think, the number one ranked high school in the United States. It's a STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math program school you get admitted to it. It's statewide in Virginia. You get admitted to it through the taking of a test and your academic performance. Well, you know, guess what? much like the targeted high schools in New York, guess who ends up at that school in a disproportionate number? Asians.
Oh yeah.
Asians comprise a very high percentage, way out of.
Well, it used to be in our day, in the high end schools like that, a lot of the Jewish kids were all number 1 through 10, and now they're all Asians.
Well, by the way, you know, just we've talked about this before. So, Ashkenazi Jews, who as a group have the highest IQ, measured IQ in the human population, are still taking 1 out of 3 Nobel Prizes like they did this year, even though they are 1 out of 700 in the you know, human population in terms of proportion. But in any event, Thomas Jefferson High School has now pulled the plug on its merit system that measured, you know, academic achievement and academic ability. They have pulled the plug on that and said, we're not going to use that anymore. We're going to use this merit lottery, because we're just not getting the kind of diversity that we want in our system. Not meaning diversity of thought, but diversity of color, and specifically color. That's what they're focused on. You're seeing a number of schools, a number of colleges in California eliminating the SAT, because again, our merit selection process is not giving us the result that we want. And in fact, if you talk to anybody about something called systemic racism, the evidence for systemic racism is not evidence of intentional racial discrimination, but simply looking at the end result. So, to use a sports example, because we're a sports show, the NBA would be considered systemically racist because it's predominantly African American, and not, you know, there's no other races that play. Or the racial balance of the NBA is way out of proportion to the population.
Yeah, but what about a guy like me?
I don't see anybody screaming that we need to investigate the NBA, however, for its selection process.
Well, I think they should have one guy in every team whose vertical leap was less than 6 inches. I could have been there.
Well, yeah. Well, I think it was Barbershop, the movie Barbershop, where there's this hilarious discussion about the 3-point line and the idea that these guys are, you know, white people put the 3-point line in place so that they could still continue to play basketball.
Well, I think in high school and college, that might have been maybe, but it's a long way in pro.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was pitched out that way, but I mean, the essence of a claim of systemic racism, or the proof of a claim of systemic racism, has nothing to do with discrimination. It just has to do with end result. So if a certain industry is predominantly Asian or white or whatever, then that's evidence that they are systemically discriminating. it doesn't apply to, it apparently doesn't apply to basketball teams or football teams or other athletic endeavors, although I'm waiting for U.S. swimming to be attacked for its lack of racial diversity.
Well, they only want people that can swim.
That's where this movement has gone. It's gone to a quota system and a system where we are not going to merely not discriminate, but now we have to actively discriminate in favor of certain groups. And one of the interesting things about, I think I mentioned this a week or two ago, critical race theory, which is something the president has moved to ban in all executive agencies. They can't take this kind of training, and the people who are their contractors can't engage in this kind of training. It was misidentified in the first presidential debate, I think deliberately, as racial sensitivity training. It really is not. It says basically that, look, racism is everywhere, and we have to act in a way that promotes certain favored groups. And the first thing you have to look at when somebody comes in, whether it's an employment decision or something else, is we have to look at their race, their gender, and their sexual orientation, and then we have to make a decision based on that.
Well, there's
the actual antithesis of our employment discrimination law.
Well, there's a somewhat of a middle ground here. We had the gentleman, I think he's not there anymore. We had the principal of Lindblom Math and Science Academy, didn't we, Manny?
I don't remember that.
Who's a friend of Gene's?
Okay, yeah, I do. I guess I certainly remember Gene, and so yeah, maybe I do remember.
Well, that was
several years ago.
Yeah, and we had. We'll start this story now. We'll talk about it after break. But Lindblom is this big, huge, square block high school down. It was like three blocks from my grandmother's place, and really a horrible neighborhood. Beautiful building. And one day, Audrey and I went to a funeral there, and you know, we managed to get out. But you know, I don't mind going in those neighborhoods, although I'd like a less now that bullets are flying. But all of a sudden, I look at the place, Lou, and I think the place is all, it looks like it's brand new. I mean, it's gorgeous. It was a gorgeous building to start with. It turns out they turned it into this Lindblom Math and Science Academy. And somehow or another, they got some private money, and they actually figured out a way where people who were retiring from, like, businesses could be teachers there without being 20 years in the system. I don't know how the hell they did that, but basically, it's probably one of the top 10 schools in the state now, or 15. And the people go there, I mean, it's predominantly black. I'm going to say that a lot of those kids, some of it, at that age, they have kids that have a knack for math or science. I don't know that they pass the full test to get into Walter Payton or to get in Jones or someplace. But they're going there in some combination between the kids and the parents and the they somehow or another, somebody had the chutzpah there, or the stones, I don't know how the hell they did it. They basically told the neighborhood, you better stand down. These kids are walking from the bus, and if anybody gets in trouble, somebody's paying somebody. I don't know how the hell they did it. There hasn't been any incident of that, even though, Lou, you and I wouldn't walk 40 steps in that place. But they've managed to do exceptionally well. And these kids, I don't know if it's nurture, not nature, or whatever it is, but the combination of them wanting to be there, the parents wanting to be there, and really good teachers, I think you put these kids up against anybody. Anyway, SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 49. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Weber, Mr. Lou Michaels with a Friday appearance up in the South today. Kevin's mad because you weren't on with him, Lou.
I would love to be on with Mr. O'Neill.
Yeah, you guys be ganging up on me. That's my futures up 16, as a futures up. Although you're not ganging up on me as much as now that I'm in the middle, because I can bob and weave much more than I can see clearly.
Well, let me before you run the traffic weather sports. Let me just real quickly follow up with your comment. There is a middle ground, and it requires a level of discernment. Other than, or that is more involved than simply bean counting. You know, counting how many of X, how many of Y, how many of Z we have on our board or in our company.
Oh, yeah.
But that's difficult, number one. And number two, it's hard to measure. And frankly, the EEOC and other chartered anti-discrimination agencies that are charged with enforcing this stuff, are not really set up to be able to do this. They don't have the skill sets, and again, it requires a nuance that they simply are not going to bother to engage in. So we end up just bean counting. You know, how many Hispanics, how many gays, how many women, how many blacks, how many whoever.
Lou, this is the no work group. How we decide how many people are on unemployment, people that are getting the checks. As they fall off, even if they're still looking, they're not employed anymore, they're off. It's nuts. S&P futures up 16, NASDAQ futures up 55, Dow futures up 124. We keep pushing, just keep pushing for the more money into the system. Nikkei down 27.1%. Shanghai now again, these guys reopened up 54.7%. Hang Seng down 74.3%. Europe. We were pretty flat earlier, now a little more positive. DAX up 16.1%, FTSE up 48.8%, CAC round up 27.5%. Review of yesterday, Dow up 122, NASDAQ up 56, S&P up 27. Bonds, 0.78, up another 1 basis point today. Blend, they're not going with us, they're going the other way. Minus 0.53, Japan very steady at positive 0.03. Oil, down 32 cents, but still appreciably above 40 at 40.87. Brent down 26 cents, 43.08. Natural gas up 11 cents, 273. RBOB down 2 cents, 120. Gold up 25 hours at 1920. Silver down 64 cents. Up 64 cents. And copper up 3 cents at 307. As we've got a weaker dollar this morning, and they're showing it. Maybe what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet, Chief, coming in on the area expressways. If you're heading into downtown this morning, nice and quiet on the Edens and Kennedy. No issues on the Eisenhower, Stevenson. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Same for Lakeshore Drive in both directions. One crash off the expressways, and that's in the northwestern suburbs. Bartlett, Naperville Road at Lake Street, there is a crash. And then to the southwest, still working on that crash from earlier this morning on Archer Avenue at Cliff Street. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be an absolutely phenomenal October day today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 80. Right now it is crystal clear and 58 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 99 today. Right now it's clear and 75. In sports, Thursday night football, the Bears bounced back nicely from their embarrassing loss on Sunday at home against the Colts. Fell behind 13-0 late into the second quarter, and it looked like it would be more of the same before Nick Foles kind of turned his game around, rallied the Bears for a touchdown, and then Kyle Fuller forced a turnover, and the Bears struck again with another touchdown right before the half to take a 14-13 lead at half. Both teams traded a pair of field goals in the second half, and the Bears hung on to beat Tampa Bay 20-19. Bears are now 4-1. Tampa Bay drops to 3-2. Nick Foles, 30 of 42, a touchdown and an interception for an 84 QB rating. After a very bad start, he bounced back nicely. Chief.
Lou, what I was saying is I'm a disciple or something. I never want to have anybody who's not qualified or the best at the position, but you know, to get off the racist thing for a second, everybody knows in Chicago, of course, we have any cab drivers left. A lot of them were Arab, right? So somebody piles off the plane or whatever the hell you do from Arab, you're obviously not taking a train. The guy wants to be a cab driver, but he's having trouble in English, doesn't know where the streets are. And I go, hey, whoa. I don't want you as a cab driver. You can't find any place. I would be happy to have a 6-week course at Richard J. Daley or Harold Washington for you to go take that course, and when you're done, you can pass the cab test with flying colors, and I'll be happy to be your first passenger. There needs to be some common sense here, Lou. I don't know why don't we have it?
Because we are in the grip of an ideology, or we're in the grip of ideologues that are more interested in seeing their particular version of reality play out, or who think their version of reality is in fact the way to go, and they are denying what is in front of them, and the evidence of their eyes, so that they are, you know, they're going to try to alter reality. I mean, this whole shutdown of the SATs in California schools, for example, is an evidence that they're not really interested in getting, you know, people into the universities who are going to be, you know, top flight, you know, students. They're more interested in graduating a certain number of people with certain physical characteristics or gender characteristics or whatever, and that's going to somehow, it's going to somehow create a world where, you know, race is either irrelevant or whatever it is they're looking for. We don't have to, this goes on both sides. You know, the Iraq war and the way it was prosecuted, was basically an example of ideologues who ignored the evidence, in front of them as to what was going to happen when we went into Iraq. Just said, you know, we can create this democracy in an Arab culture that hasn't had it for 1,000 years. When your organization gets in the grip of ideologues, reality kind of falls away, and we start making decisions based on what we want to happen rather than on what is really happening, and so I think that's what's what's driving the train. It's very specific. It's very consistent. There are a lot of people in corporate America, in academia, in our cultural institutions like Hollywood and our media that firmly believe this and believe that this is the way to go. I'm astounded at the issues with critical race theory because again it is completely antithetical to our anti-discrimination laws, but it, you know, it's got a grip and this is what we're seeing.
Well,
Yelp's to take it back to our initial discussion. What's happening with Yelp is another manifestation of that. It's a way of virtue signaling that hey, we're on board with you guys, and we think this is important too. And I think that's the brave new world we're entering.
The people that are all into this are pretty safe away from it. Just saying.
I'm sorry?
The people that are all into this, first of all, they're demanding that I admit that I'm a racist. But you know what, Lou, I'm not. So I'm not going to. So
what are you talking
about? Well, yeah, I mean, that's the essential element of it. Because and Chief, the reason that you're seeing that is because the programs that we've used up to this point are not getting the results that these folks think we should be getting. So now we're going to change the paradigm. We're going to change the model. Instead of acting in a way that we're going to try to prevent discrimination, we're going to assume that everybody is discriminating all the time.
Yeah.
And the only way to prevent discrimination is to actively engage in discrimination in the other direction.
But has there ever been a time in your lifetime where we didn't have some sort of ideologue sort of running the place? I mean, clearly the Cheney Rumsfeld group were ideologues, and they held sway for 12 years.
I'm going back to within my life experience. So I go back to, you know, David Halberstam's The Brightest and the Best, or The Best and the Brightest, I can never keep it straight, that fantastic book about the way to get into Vietnam. And those guys were ideologues.
You had the McNamara's in the world, those kind of guys. Those guys were all, who did they name the most? Was it McNamara? Was it Westmoreland? Who originally got us in there?
Well, it was part of this, and I think one of the things that's going to come out, I mean, from a longer view of our history, one of the things that's going to jump out at us is just how totally controlling the anti-communist line and the anti-communist mindset was in terms of driving so much of our culture in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And don't get me wrong, the Soviet Union at that time was an existential threat. They wanted the destruction of the United States, and they wanted all of our allies. Everything we stood for, they opposed. I get that. But that mindset that, you know, we have to stop communism, that ideology, drove us in some terrible directions. And Vietnam was one of them. A number of other things I can think of. But so I'm thinking about that. I think I will define an ideologue as somebody who has a political philosophy or a particular philosophy, and it takes hold of them to such an extent that they are incapable of seeing reality for what it, you know, what it is, versus reality for what they want it to be and what they think it should be. I think everybody has a political philosophy. Everybody in Washington comes in with a political philosophy, and the people we elect generally tend to have political philosophies. So I think I can't say that there hasn't been a time when we haven't been in the grip of people with one political philosophy or another. But I think, you know, there was a fair amount of pragmatism, for example, with somebody like Nixon or Ford. Carter, maybe not so much, because I think Carter saw himself as a peace bringer to the exclusion of everything else. I think Reagan was not particularly ideological. I mean, he proved to be flexible. And of course, the guy that I think was not ideological, but who I think is probably one of the smarter people we've had in the White House, although I detested him, was Bill Clinton. Clinton was not an ideologue. He had a certain political philosophy, but he was willing to compromise whenever.
Yeah, I would agree. I wonder what the, I'll go back to the subject's always close to my heart, and obviously what we're seeing, I think, play out clearly right now in the markets and everything is the idea of the role of money and the role of inflation and the role of those kinds of things. And I, came through a time, you were close to the same age, to where the idea that the people back then pushed this philosophy that we're just going to create more money and help us pay off Vietnam War debt, and we're not going to worry about, it's not really going to have any other consequences. Well, it turns out it did. And what the thing that I remember so much, and, things get emblazoned into you, Lou, and it's usually because something that is close to the reservation, meaning yourself, right? When I was at Pullman, I remember doing all the cost of living adjustments for all the union workers, and the only guy who didn't get a cost of living adjustment was me. So let's put it this way. It was very close to home, and we also had a few vendors that were small enough that didn't have it, right? I mean, I did the truck guys. The truck is the wheel and axle combination. That's the truck. That whole thing on the bottom of the car. There's two per car. Actually, there probably have been some cars that had three, Lou, that had an articulated truck in the middle, but I won't go into that. But those guys, that was a big enough piece of the car. The air conditioner guys, they definitely had one. But I'm going to say maybe the headlight guys didn't. The on and off switch for the headlights where the engineer was probably didn't. So it was very obvious to me early on, when I was young, that any kind of an inflationary situation not only is bad for just about anybody, for everybody in total, but it was particularly uneven. For some people, it was okay. That particular way, the way that hit, people's houses crept up, and people who had money in the bank managed to make more money on their interest. So pension funds did well. People who didn't own anything that just were paying rent did lousy. People who were in a job that didn't have a cost of living increase did lousy. So it was amazingly uneven, and I learned that at a very early age. And for really the next 20 years of people in the Fed, they were all people who remembered all that, maybe not as well as I did, on a personal level. And the idea was we would never even begin to go there again. You could take stagflation, and by the year 2020, it would be out of Webster's dictionary if there is such a thing anymore. And yet now we seem to have people, they don't give a rat's behind. As long as they pour money in, they know who the winners are right out of the gate and seem to enjoy it. It's people who own stocks, especially if you start throwing stuff in about the president tweeting one way and the other. I mean, if these guys aren't trading it, Lou, you know what? They're the dumbest people I've ever come across. If his nephew, or not his nephew, his son-in-law didn't realize that he was going to pop out that where there's not going to be a deal thing last Friday or Monday, whatever the hell it was. I mean, come on. But I'm saying, but now we're right back there. Now all of a sudden the ideologues that were pushing things one way realized that they had made such an incredible mistake, and all of a sudden for 20 years the economic ideologues said we can't go back there. Now all of a sudden it's okay. We don't care if inflation's running. These guys are thinking inflation's running 2%. And right after them on TV, some guy comes out, we're raising prices every 2 months, or every 2 weeks, whatever the hell you say. I mean, are they that blind they don't care, or are they just going to get ahead of it, get theirs, and go? I still can't figure that out, Lou. Maybe you can help me.
I don't have a lot of insight on that. I do know that true believers will keep pushing their worldview, despite the evidence that it's not working. I think most people, though, who fall into this category are ideological as long as it's they see the prospect of getting more power or more money or a combination of both, and then that promotes the ideology. What is amazing to me, and you've commented on this several times, is that notwithstanding the failures of our ideologues, there rarely seems to be any major consequence for those people.
There's never any. They're still there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a sad commentary, but unfortunately it seems to be true. And Rudyard Kipling, and I'll be doggone if I can remember the name of the poem, but Rudyard Kipling wrote a really good poem about this, about, you know, some guy who you know, ever since the dawn of recorded time, there's a guy who gets the driest place in the cave and the place closest to the fire, and then dies and takes the finest grave. You know, it seems that there are people like that who are willing to make those or get into those kinds of situations, and even when they make bad choices, nothing bad seems to happen to them.
Well, I mean, I'm not one of these. I'm not Mr. The Gladys Kravitz of the world. You got to be watching everybody all the time, but somehow or another.
Matt, what is the name for the new Gladys Kravitz?
The Karen. Oh,
the Karen, yeah.
The Karen.
Yeah.
That's right. You gotta get out of Gladys Kravitz, Chief. There's a new paradigm or model, and her name is Karen.
I feel bad for all the lovely women out there actually named Karen.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure where that came from. I don't think it's a particularly, I think it's just something you got sort of sui generis developed on social media.
It stands for something, right? What does it stand for?
I don't think it does. I think Lou's right. I think it was just sort of a name that was thrown out there, like, I bet this lady's name is Karen or something like that, and then it just sort of caught fire.
I thought I saw on the Hey Jackass page that it actually stands for, or maybe they made up
Maybe they made up their own version, yeah.
Yeah.
They probably did.
But, I mean, there's nothing in this world, like you say, Lou, in our world, and I'm not going into the the Russians knocked everybody off when they got rid of the Romanovs. They nailed everybody. Well, what if we end up in some, and I hope I'm wrong, what if we end up in some kind of a major stagflation here, and we end up with 48 tapes of this guy Powell saying there is no inflation, there's no inflation, there's no inflation. And by the way, we can even let it go past 2%, and we're denying it. What if somebody 5 years from now or 2 years from now comes up with a tape of all these people that, like, I don't know if they went to dinner because of the COVID or whatever, saying, God, we all know this inflation is out there, but let's just keep it under our hats, screw these people. What if something like that were to surface? These guys can't be that dumb. They have more information at their fingertips than I can find in a whole lifetime. How do they not know that everybody's raising prices all over the damn place? How do they not know? And I guess none of them ever shop. That part I get, but how do they not know? Or are they so lost in the jungle that they can't see a tree?
I think what you'll see, or what we'll eventually see, is the same. Maybe is the same kind of things we're seeing with the Russia collusion. That this stuff starts boiling up, and there were lots of people who said, look, this is, you know, we're headed toward an inflationary cycle, and it's going to be a problem, and even worse, how do we position ourselves, even though we're making these decisions, how do we position ourselves so we don't get whacked by it?
Well, and
that's what you're going to see, I think.
Well, the thing that frosts me is, as a money manager, you know, I talk to my clients all the time, and they are, without saying so, they'd love to have me or any manager they might have more in tune with, shall we say, the news on a second by second basis. Is that a nice way of saying that, Lou? You know, I mean, because right now the government's pushing the market around all day and night. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And which is not my idea of how a market's supposed to be, but it's the cards I'm being dealt. At the end of the day, I mean, what happens if it was all a fraud? I mean, I guess my Someday it will end, this money coming in. And what I don't want to have happen is the people that have benefited the whole way somehow get the menu, the memo, and the day before they all sell. Because all the people who think they know something are convinced they're going to get that memo. I'm convinced I'm not going to, because I never have. That's
well, this goes back to the idea that we talked about just previously about ideologues being, you know, the true believers will not necessarily benefit from something like this because they will stay true to their worldview. But a lot of these people are just their ideology attaches to them and they run with it only as long as it's going to give them access to power and money. And once, you know, they'll make arrangements to make sure that power and money keep coming. And ideology kind of takes a back seat to that.
What did Claude Rains say? The winds are now blowing from Vichy, so I'm with Vichy?
Yes.
Anyway, Louis, have a good weekend, buddy. SP Futures up 20. No Bear. The Bears already won. Up 20. You get to watch the Broncos. NASDAQ
yeah,
up
go Irish.
And go Irish. We'll be back on Monday.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.